Welcome to Camp Constitution Radio with your host, Hal Shurtleff.
This show is heard on WBCQ The Planet every Tuesday and Thursday evening at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And you can also hear it on our YouTube channel, which is simply Camp Constitution, and on our Podomatic page, podomatic.com, and just punch in Camp Constitution. It is sponsored by Camp Constitution, which, among other things, runs a week-long family camp. And this year's camp will be held at the Lakeside Christian Camp and Retreat Center in beautiful Pittsfield, Massachusetts, from July 28th to August 3rd. And we have a guest on the line here, President Bob Bossard of the Massachusetts Sons of the American Revolution. How you doing, Bob?
Very good, Hal. How are you?
I'm doing great, thank you. I just returned from the Mass Hopes Homeschool Convention in Worcester, and I met a gentleman that had a great program. It's called Stand Up America. He has this Benjamin Franklin, a cartoon character, on a screen, and you can interact with Benjamin. You can ask him questions about his involvement in the founding of this country, and it's designed for mostly young people, but it's really a lot of fun, and we hope to have him at our camp this year. So anyway, I want to discuss this incredible organization that I'm honored to be a part of, called the Sons of the American Revolution. And Bob, you are the Massachusetts president. Of course, they have chapters in all 50 states and I think other parts of the world. So tell us a little bit about your background and what got you involved in the Sons of the American Revolution, and then tell us some things about the Sons of the American Revolution.
Certainly. I've been a member now since 2014, so I'm a new member. I'm not one of these old-timers. Originally from Pennsylvania, and I had never heard of the Sons of the American Revolution. I got involved when my daughter was applying to college, and even though I knew of a patriot ancestor of ours, I never heard of the Sons of the American Revolution. We grew up knowing all about the Daughters of the American Revolution, and with Catherine applying to college, I knew that there were scholarships available and that perhaps she should look into becoming a member of that organization. So I got down and dirty and with the genealogy and put together her application, and she was accepted in 2010. So it wasn't for another few years that somehow I saw reference to the Sons and decided I would use all of the work I did for her application and did my own. So that I kind of went in backwards. A lot of people use record copies of an older generation and use that to get into the organization. I went backwards. I used my daughter's application to get myself in. So that's where that began.
In order to qualify to be a member, not anyone can just join. First of all, you have to be a male. And what are the qualifications besides that? What connections do you have to have from a founder?
Very good point.
One of the founders.
Right. This is a male lineage society. So to qualify to become a member, unlike some of the other lineage societies, you don't need to trace your roots to a soldier, although many of us do. And in my case, I do. You just need to be able to demonstrate that you have descended from somebody who has evidence of being on the patriot side of the situation. So for the most part, the easiest records to find, and you have to prove your way, are military records. So most of our members do use soldiers ultimately, because those are the records easiest to find. Although that's not required, you can, if you have someone who was on the Patriot side of the cause, use that ancestor to get in. So,
well, for example,
John
Adams was not a soldier, but
correct.
I would say without John, we probably wouldn't be a free people. So anyone that has lineage to John Adams, and I'm sure there are some.
That's right.
And maybe if
Paul Revere. Paul Revere is another example.
Paul Revere.
Yes.
Well,
we have a descendant.
He did lead some soldiers into Canada. But that's another topic for another time. Yeah, so there's, by the way, I think he had 16 children, and they all survived. He fathered 16 children, I should say. Got to give credit to his poor wife. And I think
correct.
They all survived childhood. So there's a lot of Revere's out there today.
That's right.
I know there's some that belong to the SARDAR. So if your ancestor could have been a member of the Committees of Safety, Committees of Correspondence, a member of some in some capacity, not necessarily a soldier, but like
right,
my,
right.
It was easy for me to trace my lineage because my ancestor bore the name of Shurtleff, although there's probably other people that I can trace back to that with other last names that I don't need to. And I think today is so much easier to find your lineage, especially because of the internet, where, 30 or 40 years ago, you had to, if you didn't have this already, you'd have to go to painstaking research to get records, but today it's relatively easy.
That's absolutely true. And beyond that, there were kind of privacy rules in play where record copies weren't automatically provided. You could know of a patriot ancestor and not know the exact route, that is the lineage path to that ancestor, but somebody else did. And you weren't always able to get your hands on that information, whereas that's very easy to do today. Record copies. So if you know your ancestor, but you don't necessarily know the genealogy, you can get the roadmap, so to speak, through what is called a record copy. So, but that wasn't always the case. So, you're absolutely right. It is much easier in today's world to do this, and people are finding that they have multiple ancestors. Once you are in the organization, it's popular to continue to look for others, and you have supplemental applications. And it's not uncommon for people to have 3, 4, 5 supplemental ancestors as well as their primary.
Now, give us a little background of the organization itself, when it was founded, and some of the things that people do, and why should people join if they qualify for membership, I should say.
Right. Well, this is an old organization. 1889, it was founded, and what was happening was shortly after the centennial, the 100th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration, or the beginning of the war, it became apparent to a lot of people that our ancestors that were there in the flesh are no longer around. And there was a new surge of patriotism at that time. And there was efforts to form organizations to commemorate and remember those ancestors. So the sons, the daughters, the Society of the Cincinnati, there's many organizations.
Now, Henry Knox was the founder of the Cincinnati, is that correct?
Well, George Washington was, to be honest.
Was
with
it?
Okay. Yeah.
And in order to qualify for that group, you had to have an officer who served in the Revolutionary War.
An officer, and then you also needed to be the first male of your generation. So.
Really? So it's really exclusive.
So it's a very limited group. Yes, it's much more difficult to get into that organization. But they prevail. They've been around the longest. That was started back in the 1700s. So they've been around a long time. The Suns, 1889, here in Massachusetts, we were one of the first societies formed. And we have a long history here. There's been a number of president generals that have hailed from Massachusetts. And I spoke recently about one of them, Edward Shepherd Barrett, who was an early Massar president who was from Concord and a descendant of Colonel James Barrett, where he was the farmer who stored all of the munitions in Concord that the Redcoats marched to that fateful day that started the whole war. So talk about a patriotic lineage. Edwin Shepherd Barrett has one that can't be beat, I would say. On top of that all, he built a home that overlooked the North Bridge, and that that no longer exists. That home is gone now. It was torn down. But he literally sat on what is now National Park property overlooking the North Bridge. So he was one patriot to be remembered, that's for sure.
And well, that's one of the main reasons why I got involved, is because of the love of history, and not just loving history, but making it alive to other people. And so when you see the Henry Knox Color Guard, which the Massachusetts Something American Revolution has, marching on that North Bridge, firing volleys to honor those that had fallen there in that, or fought, not everybody died, of course. I just think it's just a great, I attended one of those parades, and I remember seeing a group on the bridge, and then they played bagpipes, they're playing Amazing Grace. It's hard not to get a little misty-eyed if you're a sentimental patriot like I am. Just a great experience.
Right.
But what I love is the interaction with the young children. You know, these are unforgettable moments that they meet these guys in these realistic uniforms, and you can touch these things, firelocks or muskets, you know. And I think
that's right.
That's what you need. And, you know, I think it was Ronald Reagan who said that we're just one generation away from losing our history. And if it's up to people like us to keep it alive, and that's one of the things I love about the SAR, is because they do that.
That's true. As a member of the Color Guard, I'm actually the commander as well currently. This has become one of our key events every year, the firing on the North Bridge. That always happens on Patriots Day, April the 19th, not on
right.
the holiday, which is always the
right.
third Monday of April.
Monday, yeah. Yeah.
We also do celebrate that day with a banquet held in Concord. Not really a banquet, but a luncheon. But the President General has attended this, at least for the last 10 years. And Concord has a parade through the town that we participate in. That's one thing that we do. But we then later in the week, on the 19th, and this has only been for the last 4 years, or this was the fourth year we did it, we have been invited by the National Park to participate in ceremonies where the Color Guard marches in, crosses the bridge. While on the bridge, we perform a musket volley. And this is done, there's plenty of spectators there, and you're talking about the children, lots of kids were there this year. We had pictures taken afterwards. People, you know, when you see soldiers in colonial garb, you want your selfie done with them. That's not uncommon to us. But with all the kids this year, it was quite impressive. They gathered around. We had one youngster who came in. He was 8 years old. I remember his first name was Caleb. We have a
That's
Caleb
right.
in the Color Guard. Caleb came up to us. He had a plastic musket and a tricorn hat on, and he posed with us for pictures. And then informally, we marched back to the cars parked up at the visitor center, which is a few hundred yards away.
Right.
And with our drummer on the drum and us in rank, this young Caleb marched and never missed a step. He stayed in perfect step the whole
stayed
way back.
Step, yeah.
So it was quite impressive to see a youngster that age totally involved with what was going on. So
that kind of makes all of the effort, you know, the learning about cleaning the musket and keeping you buying the uniforms and keeping them up to date and all that, and then all the different training. It makes it worthwhile when stuff like that happens. But tell me some of the activities that the SAR is involved in, and what kind of things that members do.
Well, the Color Guard is a big part of it. Now, it's not the only part of it by any stretch of the imagination. It is really what is our most visible end to the public. We, as the Color Guard, participate in parades. We participate in grave marking ceremonies. We are called to present the colors at various events. The Color Guard has a schedule that last year had maybe a total of a dozen events. We have more requests than we're able to fill is one of the things that I should point out. The group has 25 names on our call list right now of 25. I'd say there's probably two dozen to 18 maybe at the tops that will show up from time to time, but The group is not huge. We don't have a huge Color Guard. We're always looking for more members. But we are the public face. Besides that, we do the grave marking work is something that is really becoming more and more popular amongst the local chapters. And you don't have to be a Color Guard member to be involved with this sort of effort. What we do need to do is identify where Revolutionary War soldiers are buried, and we want to ultimately mark those graves with SAR markers. And this is something that's being undertaken with several chapters throughout the state, and it's getting more and more popular. Sometimes there is Color Guard involvement where there's a whole big ceremony, but there doesn't need to be. So that, along with events that occur on our traditional holidays, you'll see involvement. Veterans Day, wreaths across America now is becoming very popular and involves members that are not necessarily in the Color Guard. Memorial Day, the 4th of July, all of the significant national holidays you'll see somewhere along the line, we're going to be participating in one way or another.
So the SAR also has scholarships. They award to certain young people.
Yes, the youth program involves providing support and award and acknowledgement to the Boy Scouts of America is one organization that we support. The JROTC and ROTC programs of the military we support with awards. This is becoming a very big program where we, commanders of the various ROTC units and JROTC units, recommend people for a citation. And we, in our Color Guard uniforms, will oftentimes show up and make those presentations.
At our luncheon, just past April 15th, there were some young men who were high school ROTC cadets, and they had saved the lives of some, there was a house on fire. And it was so nice to see these wholesome young men and their parents. None of these folks, I think, are SAR people, but we recognize them. And again, an unforgettable experience for these young people. In fact, I went up to them and offered them their parents. I offered them a week at our summer camp, you know, so hopefully some of them will be able to.
Oh, that's terrific. That's correct. That originated with members in the Henshaw chapter, which is in Worcester. And what occurred was last Thanksgiving, these four boys, all of them members of the junior ROTC at North High School in Worcester, were driving by, and it was rather late at night, I think, not the wee hours, but 11 p.m. or something,
mm-hmm.
and one of them detected the smell of smoke, and they pulled over and identified that a building was, in fact, on fire, and they raced to the doors, banged on doors, and ended up barging in and alerting the residents, who were mostly asleep in that building at the time, that the building was on fire. And this was covered significantly in the local media, but not widespread. I don't actually recall hearing about it myself. I live in Quincy, but it was a big-time event. And those members out in the Henshaw chapter said, you know what, the SAR offers a heroism award. Now, this is above and beyond what we do for ROTC or mm-hmm. Eagle Scouts or Youth Awards. This is a separate award that gets awarded by our organization to citizens. And they felt that this would be a very appropriate medal to award to those JROTC cadets. We happen to have the President General, the leader of the National Society, with us at that meeting on April 15th that you referred to, and he made the presentation. So, yes, it was quite an experience to have them come show up in uniform with their parents and be acknowledged in that way.
Now, the organization, now you're the Massachusetts president.
Yeah.
Can you explain how it's structured? Well, we discussed local chapters, but how is it structured? There's a regional, state, and then national offices?
Right. The national headquarters is in Louisville, Kentucky. It originally was in Washington, D.C. They moved it to Louisville, Kentucky, back in the 70s, I believe. And they have quite a headquarters building down there, and now a new museum. And they're in, like, the Museum Row. Louisville Slugger bats are across the street.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I haven't been there myself, but I understand it's quite an experience. They have a big library on premises and whatnot. The national organization is where the headquarters exists, and you've got the President General and the Treasurer General, and then all of the senior officers all the way down the line.
And these folks are all volunteers. They're all volunteer people, aren't
yes,
they?
Yes, everybody's a volunteer. There is full-time staff members mm-hmm. that run the corporation that are separate from them. They run the business
right.
end of the organization. Now, that's the national portion. We all report to them, basically. Each individual state, and all 50 states, do have their own society, and they're actually in many foreign countries as well. I can't tell you how many exactly, but there's a number of societies in other countries.
Well, let me ask you this. Let me ask you this question, Bob. If you are, if we had some French that fought for us, we had some other, would they qualify to be an SAR? Or do you have to be a U.S. citizen?
No, French do qualify. The French have their, they do have their own society, and yes, I'm not sure what that process is, but I know that France is one of the countries that does have a society. In fact, going back to Edwin Shepherd Barrett, he, while he was the Massachusetts president, actually he went on to become president general of the National Society. Maybe it was while he was president general, he brought France into the organization. So I can't give you the detail. I don't know what the details
are. Right, that's pretty interesting.
Right, but I assume that if you were a French soldier, that there would be some way to qualify. But the state societies are set up. They oversee then the smaller, the smallest of the units, which are the individual local chapters. And we encourage all new members to be first participants in their local chapter, and then as things grow, you get involved with statewide activity. So, yeah, it goes all the way up from your local level to the national level.
Now, how long is your term as president? Is that a year long? Is it rotating, or how does that work?
The election for president is a one-year term. Most people don't get settled into the job until the end. I can vouch for that. Till the end of about a year, and they'll stick around for at least 2 years. What we've seen in the recent past is 2 years is generally considered a full term, although you are elected 1 year at a time. It can be longer than that. I don't know that there's term limits, but I don't think I'll be testing that myself. But
well, I'm very glad that you are elected president of the Massachusetts chapter. We have about a minute left. Where can the millions upon millions of listeners all over the world, if they want to learn about the SAR, if they qualify, or they just want to learn some great history of our country, where can they go?
Well, talking about the Internet, that's the place to go right now.
Yeah,
the National Society has a huge website. that would be, I guess it is, www.sar.org. Our local, our state website, which has just recently been redone, and is actually, Mike Fishbein did a wonderful job rebuilding that website, is up and running at www.massar.org. We refer to ourselves, the Massachusetts Society, as Massar, MASSAR.org. There's tons of information there. We try to keep our calendar very up to date. But other articles of interest and events and so forth are always to be found there.
Well, Bob, thank you so much. To compatriot, Bob, I should say, that's the term we use
yes,
to address each other.
Yes,
and we'll see you hopefully at the next meeting of the Boston chapter. And by the way, there is a Facebook page, too, for the Boston chapter.
That's
correct. Meet some of the people that belong to it. With that, I want to thank you. Thank you, folks, for listening. You've been listening to Camp Constitution Radio with your host, Hal Shetler. And until next week, may God richly bless you.
Thank you, Hal.